Our second case this morning is United States against Rodriguez. Counsel for the defense.
Chief Judge Efron, honorable members of the court, may it please the court, I am Captain Griffin Dunham, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Mark Stevenson, represent the appellant, Senior Airman Michael Rodriguez. The issue in the case basically boils down to whether or not the Court of Criminal Appeals can conduct a factual sufficiency review when they strike the on diverse occasions language from a specification. In Airman Rodriguez's case, at the trial level, the government alleged three uses of marijuana in a specification that stated the use of marijuana on diverse occasions. That came from three different witnesses. The court martial panel came back with a guilty finding on that specification. At the Court of Criminal Appeals level, at the Air Force Court, they struck the on diverse occasions language because two of the three alleged uses were based upon uncorroborated confessions. Now, in striking down that language, the court did find beyond a reasonable doubt that they could affirm the specification as to a single use because they were convinced that Airman Rodriguez used on occasions testified to by one of the witnesses. As a threshold matter now, the issue is whether or not the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals should be similarly situated with a trial court, meaning if they come to a finding of not guilty, should it be the same regardless of where that case is during the appellate process or at the trial level. And as an initial matter, assert that is the case. Whether the trial court comes back with a not guilty to on diverse occasions or the first level Court of Criminal Appeals level does it, this court or even the Supreme Court, we all get back to the same position of striking that language, and then there being some uncertainty about what the trial court actually thought about, deliberated about, and ultimately concluded.
Counsel, appreciating that you didn't have the benefit of the case when you wrote your briefs, can you explain why United States versus Brown doesn't control the outcome of this case?
Yes, Your Honor. The United States versus Brown is different in the fact that in Brown there was a single specification stated at one time alleged, indecent assault, and then,
Go ahead.
And then the judge instructed the members that they could come to the conclusion about whether or not the indecent assault occurred if they decided that either there was digital penetration or that there was penetration by the accused penis. In that case, the court made it clear that it's not a matter of the means, it's a matter of whether or not the members came to a decision about an element of the offense. So they can decide, they don't have to have a concurrence of the members decide that he did it in a certain manner, so long as they all agree that he's guilty of the specification and the elements of that specification, obviously. So in Brown, they may have differed on how he actually committed the indecent assault, but the court made it clear that that specification can still survive scrutiny because that's the manner in which we come to our verdicts, and I believe they might have cited the case of United States versus Griffin, the Supreme Court from long ago.
Well, I think that Brown, in the way that it dealt with Walters specifically, that the reasoning with respect to Walters and when Walters applies and when it does not has significant implications for your argument in this case.
Yes, Your Honor, but the cases are distinguishable. Brown obviously states that there is a narrow except that Walters is going to apply under the narrow and limited circumstances when you have an on diverse occasions specification that is transformed into a single-use type of specification. But the facts of those cases are substantially different because here we have an uncertainty about what the members factually decided upon. Whereas in Brown, those facts went to the means and not to the element of the offense of indecent assault. Here we're actually going to the court.
Go ahead. Complete your side. Okay.
We're going to the core elements as to what they ultimately concluded and not the means by which they got to that ultimate conclusion.
So you're distinguishing it based on the difference in the facts rather than the analysis?
Yes, Your Honor, and I will provide a 36A letter to the court once I can decipher through Brown, at least digest it, and then provide the court the distinguishing factors and the court's new rule, obviously, that allows this argument. We'll provide that later today.
Where's the ambiguity in what the members decided? They convicted him on diverse occasions, three specs. Where's the ambiguity?
The nature of the ambiguity comes in how the government actually charged it. The on diverse occasions language means that they were definite about Airman Rodriguez believing that he used it on more than one occasion.
Right.
But the ambiguity comes in because using that on diverse occasions language, not articulating the different uses, we don't know which one which ones they actually believed Aaron Rodriguez to be guilty of.
Well, that would invalidate any on diverse occasions conviction.
Yes, Your Honor. As soon as the
so you're arguing for a per se rule that convictions on diverse occasions are always illegitimate?
No, Your Honor. From a CPI standpoint, when it comes up to the Court of Criminal Appeals, if they were to set aside one of the uses that served as the basis for the conviction on diverse occasions, then necessarily there's going to be some inherent ambiguity in that specification. So although duplicitous pleadings have neither been condoned nor condemned by the Court, on the times when the Court of Criminal Appeals does set aside those uses, it can't be supported because we don't know what the members...
The CCA obviously thought it knew what it was doing. It accepted the diverse occasions language out and affirmed on one spec.
Yes, Your Honor.
So where's the ambiguity? And obviously the CCA thought it could perform its Article 66 review. Why couldn't it?
It couldn't because of what Walters, Siders, and Augsburger stand for, and that is that when there is a finding of not guilty, and in fact, effectively they did that finding, then we don't know what the lower court actually decided upon. So there is the ambiguity is actually what we have when the members come back with their finding of guilty on diverse occasions. We have the latent ambiguity, but then it becomes patent as soon as the Air Force Court tells us that the on diverse occasions language goes away, and now we have to try to guess or figure out what the lower court actually decided upon. So the ambiguity really comes in is did they actually get it right and the members convicted Aaron Rodriguez of the use to...
Well, the CCA said they didn't get it right, accepted out the diverse occasions language, and ended up affirming on one spec, did they not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, here we are again. Where's the ambiguity?
The ambiguity is we don't know if Aaron Rodriguez was convicted of that use that the Court of Criminal Appeals, in this case, affirmed the single use of marijuana on. So it's very likely that they actually used and then got to their on diverse occasions conviction based upon the two uncorroborated confessions that the Air Force Court struck from the language of the specification.
Well, didn't the Air Force Court affirm on a known specification?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And they, the members convicted on three known specifications, two of which the Air Force Court tossed out because of lack of corroboration.
That's where we differ, Your Honor. We don't believe that they convicted him of all three. There is no reason for us to believe that he was convicted of all three. Right?
Okay. What you're saying is he was convicted of at least two.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And there, it's uncertain now as to whether or not they actually convicted him of the third, which the Air Force Court affirmed the single use upon.
Counsel, do we know which specific incident formed the basis for the conviction of which that was affirmed at the Court of Criminal Appeals?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so we know that.
Yes, Your Honor.
And where does the Court of Criminal Appeals state that as a matter of law, any of the convictions, any of the incidents at the trial court were insufficient? That there was an illegal, where does the court below say that the trial court committed error?
On page 4 of its opinion, the court, and I'll quote them, states, given the extremely vague admissions made by the appellant, this court is unable to state that we are convinced beyond a reasonable doubt the appellant used marijuana during the time frame alleged on any occasion other than the time in which he smoked it with Airman Basic M in late November or December 2018.
That sounds to me like factual sufficiency, not legal insufficiency.
Yes, Your Honor, and regardless
okay.
of...
So the court below has not found any legal error at the trial court. Is that correct?
To a degree, Your Honor, yes. They didn't get that far.
They didn't get that far.
They stopped at factual sufficiency review, although based upon...
Well, we can solve that here, can't we?
The factual sufficiency?
Legal sufficiency.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, not asking you to concede this, but if we conclude that there was sufficient corroboration for the confession as a matter of law, and here the lower court notes that defense counsel agreed there was sufficient corroboration at trial. So if we agree that the defense counsel was correct, that the court below did not find as a matter of law insufficient corroboration, and if we find not under beyond a reasonable doubt, but under the Jackson standard, that there is sufficient evidence as a matter of law to sustain the entire findings at the trial. Why isn't that the end of this case?
Because the court went ahead and struck the on diverse occasions language conducting their factual sufficiency review.
So if they've stricken it for factual sufficiency, and they've said, we are convinced that this one incident is proved beyond a reasonable doubt, doesn't appellant know everything he needs to know under Walters and Sider, precisely what he has been factually convicted of?
No, Your Honor. And that goes back to the language of this court in Sider, when it states that the Court of Criminal Appeals cannot find as fact any allegation in the specification which the fact finder below has found the accused not guilty.
But they didn't find him not guilty.
And
they were instructed as to how they could do exceptions and substitutions if they had any questions about the diverse occasions, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but we don't know if they actually found him not guilty of the use to which the Air Force Court affirmed on. So although they...
Well, they didn't accept out any language, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's because they didn't have the opportunity. It wasn't like a bad check case. It wasn't a mega spec. It was just the on diverse occasions language used marijuana during this charge time frame, so they couldn't accept out any language from the specification, eliminating one of the three alleged uses. So we do know, and it's very clear, that they came back to a finding of guilty on more than one occasion, but we don't know about whether or not they actually concluded he was guilty on the specification that the Air Force Court made the decision upon. So they, Your Honor, to get back to...
So your proposition is that even though, and you're not conceding this, but if we found, as a matter of law, there was no error at trial, even though he then gets the benefit of a somewhat improved finding at the Court of Criminal Appeals as a matter of factual sufficiency, he can then use that to void the entire proceedings below at trial, of which there was no error.
Correct, Your Honor. And that is, again, it goes back to the opinion of this court and inside of the states that the court can't decide guilt if the lower court didn't. I know Judge Ryan had the question about they didn't come back with a not guilty finding on any in the specification. A little bit of that goes back to how it was pled using the on diverse occasions language, and it's not an issue before the court right now, but that is, as a matter of law, something that was erroneous.
So that goes to every for the government to charge each individual fact pattern as a separate charge from the defense perspective?
No, Your Honor, not always. In this case, it does make it fairly flawed once it gets up on appeal, and there are certainly some things that...
But isn't the solution, if you prevail in your theory, the government's solution will be to charge everything out?
Yes, Your Honor. And either charge everything out in different specifications or do what they did in Mincy and then just have the different uses where the members can actually accept and substitute as they may. The obvious problem with that is that potentially increases the scope of the maximum punishment that's going to face the member, but that is less important than having a clear verdict coming back from the members after they've deliberated.
Now, could this appellant have requested, the accused have requested a breakdown like that in this case if they didn't want to defend against the diverse occasions?
Yes, Your Honor, the defense...
And did they request that?
No, Your Honor. And that's exactly what Judge Crawford said in response to Walter Sider and Augsburger. But
I still don't understand how it is that you can argue that the members didn't understand that they could have accepted out diverse and put in one or put in two. I mean, I don't understand how you get that from the instructions they were given.
Your Honor, the defense position is that when the members went back to deliberate based upon the worksheet that they were given, and I'll discuss this in rebuttal also, is that they had the opportunity to strike the on diverse occasions language, and then consistent pursuant to Walters, if they found the accused guilty of the one-time use, that's when they had to talk about the date and the facts and circumstances surrounding that alleged use. But if they found him to be guilty on more than one occasion, that's where it stopped. They didn't have to say we found him guilty of two out of the three. They could just get to two and then quit. So they didn't even have to evaluate the third if they didn't want to, so long as there was the concurrence on two out of the three. But it's certainly possible And, Your Honor, I see that my time is 10 seconds away from me. May I finish the thought?
Yeah, and on rebuttal, I'd like you to address the question that was posed earlier. How does this differ from an argument that you can never find someone guilty of on diverse occasions? Because under your theory, the appellate court would never know. I will just give you an opportunity on rebuttal to continue. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Please, Court. I am Captain Jason Kelhoffer, and I, along with Colonel Jared Bruce, represent the United States. The government's position is that Walters is both legally and factually dissimilar in the present instance. Moreover, to follow appellant's logic would lead to negative consequences for future defendants. What I'd like to key in on are three areas that were touched upon in my brief. However, I'd like to expand on them. The first is the factual dissimilarities between this and Walters, and the factual errors made by appellant's assertions in this case. Secondarily, why the logic utilized by the Air Force Court in their opinion in United States versus Walters is actually applicable to this case under the present facts. And then lastly, the negative effects that occur from following appellant's logic. With regard to the facts, first off, appellant's entire argument is premised on the fact that there were three instances. That's incorrect. The record does not support that the government put forward three separate instances. Rather, the record appears to reflect two. That is fundamental to this case and their argument. The Air Force Court never came to the conclusion that there were three separate instances. The only individual, the only argument making that has been through appellant. The evidence presented at trial through Senior Airman, who were four witnesses, and I'll briefly summarize. Senior Airman Dunlap, at the record at 127, states that the appellant told her that he used marijuana use during the summer of 2002 while at home in Florida. That is going to be one instance. Using while in Florida in 2002. The second witness is A1C Dow, who at record at 230 states that the appellant stated that he used marijuana in Florida, however that was prior to his service. So however it would appear to go towards at least using in Florida. Third witness is Senior.
Well, wait a minute, is that a chargeable offense under the UCMJ?
It is not. It's just one of the witnesses that testified with regard to marijuana use, sir.
So that's not an offense that we're worried about here.
No, it's not. I believe it was only presented.
Is it uncharged misconduct?
Yes, I believe that was the premise. It was objected to. It doesn't appear to have been actually utilized in any way. It's just one of the witnesses testified with regard to marijuana in any way. Senior Lubbock was the third witness, and he testifies at the record at 249 that the appellant stated his dad brought him marijuana for his birthday party in November of 2002. That's going to be the second instance. It will be used during November at a birthday party in 2002. The fourth witness is Airman Basic Maldonado, who at the record at 179 testifies that he observed the appellant use at a party during November of 2002. Those are the only witnesses that testify with regard to marijuana use. So there were three instances supported or brought forward by the government. I fail to see where that argument is being made, unless you're trying to stretch the statement that by Senior Airman Dunlap that, well, he told me he used while he was in Florida, that encompassed more than one use. That is the only way to look at that and come up with more than two uses.
What's the difference between two and three in this case with respect to the defense argument?
Yes, sir. If the members found him guilty of diverse use, and there were only two instances, and one was struck, there's no problem because we know he was found guilty of both instances. So there's the argument that Walter would apply or anything of that nature is no.
Well, is there a problem if there's three?
Does the government admit there's a problem if there are three?
Absolutely not. Not on the facts in this case. And I will address that. But I would like to make just one more quick point with regard to the facts. The trial counsel, at record at 334, argued with regard, during his closing argument about the marijuana use, and you'll notice, he mentions only two. He mentions the November use and then some point in Florida.
Let me ask you about that Florida. This is the Dunlap testimony?
Yes, sir.
Where in the Dunlap testimony was it that he used in Florida in 2002? Isn't it the fact that Rodriguez told her in the summer of 2002 that he had used marijuana in Florida, not that he had used marijuana in Florida in the summer of 2002? You see what that distinction is?
Yes, sir. I understand the distinction. Right.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I believe that the inference was that it had been in 2002, but yes.
But that wasn't the testimony.
Correct, sir. However, but nonetheless, it goes back to the point that I was trying to, the key point with regard to that, is that we're only talking about two instances.
Okay, the two instances are what? We have the birthday party in November of 2002, and then we have a prior use in Florida that we don't know the date of.
Correct. Yes, sir. And that is the reason the Air Force Court came to the conclusion that it was factually insufficient, as was pointed out, or questioned, that the Air Force Court never made the decision that it was legally insufficient, but rather factually.
Counsel, why don't you focus your argument as to why it is you win, even if it was three?
Yes, ma'am. Walters is premised on the fact that there's an ambiguous finding at trial. Walters, Sider, Augsburger, every one of these cases, even if you go further back to United States versus Nadeau, Smith, King, all of these involve a finding at trial that was ambiguous, each one of them. And it was ambiguous because the fact finder specifically found the individual not guilty by virtue of striking on diverse occasions. There's no question. The individual had been found not guilty of something. That is the problem that this court highlighted to the Air Force Court in United States versus Walters, saying, look, you have fact-finding power under Article 66, the service courts. However, you can't apply that when you come to something incongruous with what the fact finder found. That is the entire problem. That does not exist in this case. Rather, in this case, it would be the government's argument that the original logic attempted by the Air Force Court in United States versus Walters is appropriate. Now, this court said, or at least in United States versus Walters, by the Air Force Court, essentially, their logic was that under Supreme Court law, under this court's decision in case such as Vidal, and I would state Brown as well, though they didn't have it at the time, that as they stated, the common law rule in criminal cases is that a general verdict is valid so long as it is legally supportable on one of the supported grounds, and the reviewing courts presume that the verdict rested upon a valid charge. And that's 57 MJ 556. The point is, the presumption is that the fact finder based their decision upon the valid charge. In this case, that is what we have. The real question is, as this court stated, actually, in United States versus Walters, when it was referring to the Air Force Court, this court stated further, the essence of the cases relied upon by the Air Force Court lies in the effect of uncertainty over what specific conduct may have served as the basis for a jury's general verdict of guilty. That is actually what is in this case. Now, while this court stated to the Air Force Court, the logic you applied doesn't apply, that was because there was a specific finding of not guilty by virtue of taking away the on diverse occasions. However, what this court additionally stated in Walters was that the lower court's discussion of the common law regarding verdicts was certainly a correct statement of that area of the law. So this court essentially adopted what the Air Force Court had argued, as far as the law goes, just said it simply didn't apply under those circumstances. It would be our position that it does apply under these circumstances. The general verdict is presumed to rest upon valid grounds. That case law that was utilized was, I believe, United States versus Turner, United States versus Griffin, United States versus Socher, all the United States Supreme Court cases, as well as this Court's decision in Vidal. And I would say, to a certain extent, this Court's decision in United States versus Brown. Essentially, because what this Court did in United States versus Brown is along with the idea that where you have a charge that in the conjunctive or the disjunctive has alternate means, the presumption is valid, that the fact finder used valid means.
Assuming there were three incidents, do you agree that all the members had to do was define the defendant guilty of two of the occasions?
I do, yes, Your Honor.
And do we have any way of knowing, assuming that there was three, whether they found two or three or which two they found?
We do not. However, the presumption at law is that they used the valid charges. And in this case, if you, no matter how many you remove, it's always going to be the presumption that they based it on the valid charges, per Supreme Court law and this Court's prior decisions.
But when we get to Walters and we're looking at the status of the case after the CCA has thrown out the diverse occasions, and they come down and find that it was the Maldonado testimony that was valid, and they affirm that.
Yes, sir.
How do they know that that was one of the charges that the members found him guilty of, particularly in this case when they found him not guilty of the cocaine use that Maldonado was the only witness that testified to? I mean, there's some indication there that they didn't think Maldonado was a credible witness in that charge. So at least that raises the specter that they may not have found him a credible witness in the marijuana charge.
They don't have any way of knowing.
And so it's
the minds of the jurors.
So it's okay for them to affirm on appeal a specification or an incident that the members found him not guilty of at trial?
Well, the problem is that your question makes the presumption that they could have found him not guilty.
They could have, though. You agree to that.
If you're applying that presumption, then yes, I would agree with you. However, at law, we utilize just the opposite presumption. And the presumption is that the charge or the reasoning used by the members was the valid charge. And so utilizing the presumption of law, I agree with your premise, the presumption is incorrect. And part of the reason that's incorrect, well, and additionally I'll state that the Air Force Court did a factual review and understanding the possible areas of problems with the testimony and the evidence, came to the conclusion after a factual review that there is more than sufficient evidence to support the single marijuana use. And this leads me into my third point of the negative consequences of following the logic used by appellant. Essentially, if you follow that logic, well, first of all, you have to start with the presumption that when an individual is found guilty of on diverse occasions, it is inherently ambiguous. You must start with that presumption. That is the only way to proceed with appellant's argument, that in on diverse occasions where an individual is found straight up guilty, you have to assume that it's inherently ambiguous. In addition to being in contradiction to what the law states, that leads to a few problems. For example, let's say that hypothetically an individual is charged with a specification of on diverse occasions using drugs. At trial, the government presents, let's say, 100 instances for the appropriate time frame. Let's say on appeal, the service court chooses your reason, but for whatever reason, finds one of those instances to have been improperly admitted. One instance out of 100. The result is that, first of all, they have to strike the on diverse occasions under appellant's logic, because perhaps they only found guilty of two, Perhaps of those two, one of them was the one that the appellate court decided to strike. So if you have an instance where 100 uses are brought forward, one of them is struck on appeal, the first of all, you have to strike on the verse, and then secondarily, now you're left with the problem we are here, according to appellate, and you have to set aside the entire conviction. Because you don't know what he was found guilty of when you apply that presumption and presume that the findings of guilty are in fact ambiguous. Additionally, I would argue that it causes the problem, or a question at least, to those trial counsel conducting sentencing. If that's the presumption to be applied, and that's the logic to be applied, you have a trial counsel who proceeds, has someone found guilty on diverse occasions, goes into sentencing, and essentially, perhaps, is now challenging the findings by using some of the instances in support of sentencing, because perhaps those were things that the individual was found guilty of, or found not guilty of. Although there's absolutely no reason to presume that the jury's intended that, that the jury intended that. Rather, the presumption at law and the finding were specifically as to guilty. Moreover, the defendant would be, under that logic, possibly be punished or receive a greater punishment because of some of the aggravating evidence or the evidence being used in sentencing was actually things that perhaps the jury had intended to find him not guilty of, but did not. This does leave the government, under that logic, with the alternative of charging absolutely everything. And the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals in United States versus Walters sort of addressed that. And that's in the government's brief at 7, footnote 2. But they went on to state that, this is from the Air Force Court in Walters, that even though the rules for court-martial indicate that duplicitous pleadings are disfavored, military case law suggests otherwise. Our superior court, this court, has repeatedly recognized that consolidating numerous individual acts into a single specification is a great benefit to an accused by reducing maximum punishment or at least eliminating possible exaggeration of charges. And they cite United States versus Poole and United States versus Walters. In essence, it's the government's position that United States versus Walters is both legally and factually inapplicable to the present instance. Moreover, the facts here on this case do not support appellant's argument because there were only two instances. And then lastly, to follow appellant's logic leads to negative consequences for future defendants.
If you believe, as you say today, that there was only two incidents versus three, why isn't that in your brief?
Simply an oversight by this counsel.
I mean, I just would have thought that since that was the issue that we granted on, that it would have come up before today.
Yes, ma'am. However, I guess it was highlighted to me by counsel's argument and some of the arguments that this was all premised off of three instances, and then to a certain extent the issue of the use in Florida, whether that was a statement of 2002, the statement by Senior Dunlap, to be perfectly blunt, I had originally, I guess, made the error of assuming that that was a use in 2002 and then a use prior to 2002. But further review of Dunlap's testimony convinced me that that was not the case and not a proper inference to make.
Understood.
And you think that that testimony was referring to the November 2002 incident?
I think it was just referring to a use at some point in Florida.
Okay, so that's a use at some point in Florida. Then we have Lubitsch's testimony that November 2002, that's two uses. Then we have Maldonado's testimony that he saw him at a party, which...
Well, Lubitsch's testimony was also at a party.
Okay, so you're saying that Lubich's and Maldonado's are the same?
Yes, sir. Okay. Lubich and Maldonado's are the same, and Dowell's and Dunlap. Well, Dowell's is a pre-service that was really inapplicable, so a non-factor.
Counsel, the Court of Criminal Appeals engaged in a fairly intensive factual review of this case and did not focus on the two versus three, which would have solved some of their problems. Why shouldn't we just proceed on the assumption that it's all at issue here?
Though I'm not perhaps correct in putting myself in the same camp as the judges for the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, however, I would like to think that they made the same error that I did in looking at Senior Airman Dunlap's testimony.
Well, but aren't we bound by their factual scenario unless it's clearly erroneous?
Yes, absolutely. However, what I would note is they at no point state that there were three uses.
I understand.
If there are any further questions, for these reasons, the government requests that you affirm the findings of the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Judge Efron, if I may address the issue of the three uses as opposed to the two. Although the Air Force Court does state that the evidence adduced from Airman Lubich was that he got the marijuana from the spotter, the record at page 248 goes further and actually states that he said that his dad bought him some marijuana and they smoked marijuana at the house. So that's where we have the late November use. You have Maldonado's testimony about witnessing Airman Rodriguez using marijuana sometime in November, December, and you have Dunlap's testimony that's referenced on page 127 about the summer of 2002. So there are those three distinct uses. As to what the Air Force Court ultimately found, it's not clear from their opinion. However, the record does support the finding of three uses. With regard to the on diverse occasions specification, appellant wholeheartedly agrees with the argument that was just furthered by the government counsel. If you have 100 uses, if you have 200 uses, the legal policy and the rationale that supports the scenario that you discussed must be ruled in favor of the appellant. If you have the 200 uses and they come back and say that one of those wasn't legally or factually supportable, then all of a sudden you have the possibility that those members decided upon one of the other 199 and the one which was not legally supportable. So you are going to have some ambiguity there, but the appellant tries to further the argument that, well, this shouldn't be a problem for the government because we rest upon the general findings in the United States versus Griffin and that long line of case rationale. But the government has options when they charge the on diverse occasions language. They can either, one, do just what they did or have to do in a bad check case, and that specify each of the different alleged uses, or this court could come up with an opinion that if you have an on diverse occasions specification for which there's a guilty finding, then there have to be the similar findings that we have in Walters, and that you have to specify which occasions you're referring to. Otherwise, not only does it do a disservice to the appellant during the findings portion, but then as a matter of sentencing, maybe the prosecution is going to be admitting evidence of uses to which they found the members not guilty, and then we have a problem with whether or not appellant is being sentenced for the crimes which he committed or other aggravating factors that surrounded the crimes to which he was acquitted of. That is the ambiguity in the findings. And, Your Honor, if I may address the question of on diverse occasions language, the answer is it becomes a problem as soon as it comes up for appeal, and there is a problem with one of the uses or instances to which the members base their finding of guilty upon. So although you have the case law that supports duplicitous pleadings, RCM 307C4 states that they're disfavored, and if they are going to use the on diverse occasions language, then yes, they have to be prepared to face the consequences when the appellate court has to be put in a position to either decipher the deliberative process of the members or come back with a set aside of the case.
Okay, so they set it out, they say you've got 15 uses. They set it out in 15 specs. Comes up on appeal, and you say it's an unreasonable multiplication of charges. So the government's basically between a rock and a hard place here.
No, Your Honor. They have a couple ways of getting around it. One is just to have one specification, and then the different uses within that one specification, just such as in a bad check case. The issue of multiplicity, if
I didn't say multiplicity, I said unreasonable multiplication.
Unreasonable multiplication, then that would be an issue that could be addressed by a future client. For M. Rodriguez's purpose, he would not have been serviced by such a rule, but so long as the uses are separate and distinct, the unreasonable multiplication of charges issue hopefully would be resolved in accordance with the current state of the law, and if they were, for some reason, unreasonably multiplied, that would have been a relief granted to that particular appellant when it comes up. But as the cases before this court right now, it's wholly possible that the members found him not guilty of the use that M. Maldonado testified to, which would be consistent with their other finding of the not guilty on the cocaine use, and now the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals has just affirmed a use to which the members found him not guilty of. So, in summation, following the Walters, Siders, and Osberger rationale, that the Air Force Court can't affirm a finding when finding a guilt when the facts predicated upon that finding weren't resolved against the accused at the trial level, the case must be set aside and sent back for a rehearing as applicable. That's the relief that we ask for in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. That concludes our proceedings for this morning. The court will stay in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
The court stands in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow.